Jason, the Bears played one of their crazy games again, and this time they actually won. We'll break down the just frenetic finish between the Bears and Bengals coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, we're at Paycor Stadium looking out upon an empty field after seeing one of the most bizarre endings I can think of, which, given the team that we cover, is really saying something.
You know what a game like this calls for, Patrick?
Oh, give me a grunt.
Wee doggy! That's my catchphrase when they win a crazy game.
You should have warned people to turn down there.
No, that's part of the... I mean, they know. They know. The thing is that they always win these games now. They used to never win these games. Now they always win these games. That's the third time this year that they've merited a wee doggy reaction because they went on the final play or close to the final play.
But this was crazy.
This was as wild as it gets. There were so many different ways that this could have been lost, and it looked lost. There was a point, Pat, where I think 3 minutes left, it appeared as though the Bears had taken a 48-21 lead.
They were going to go up 21. They were up. The scoreboard
27.
The scoreboard said they were up 20.
They had appeared to take a. They were about to be taking a 48 or something, a 48-27 lead on Tremaine Edmonds' 96-yard interception return, and that was with 2 or 3 minutes left, under three. So that is how in hand this appeared to be for the Bears for a moment. Now that gets called back. He's down by contact where he caught it at their own 4, and before you know it, the Bengals have the ball and a quick touchdown. And now it's a 7-point game. Then they are a 6-point game, rather, because they went for 2. Then the Bengals onside kick, score again. They've got the lead, 42-41 in the final minute. It can't get more dire than that when you squander a 14-point lead that should be ironclad, and you are now losing in the final minutes. Man, that feels like the Bears.
Can I hit you with some stats about the end game there?
Yeah.
In the final 1 minute and 43 seconds, there were 3 touchdown drives. All were for 49 seconds or less. That's insane. How about this? The last 3 minutes and 7 seconds had a Bears interception wiped out by a penalty, a Bears pick 6 that wound up going backwards by 96 yards once they reviewed it, a made onside kick, and a Hail Mary that the Bears actually played the right way.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those endings where you'd be sitting there at home watching it at... I keep even forgetting, like, what? How many points did they have? What was the lead again?
The lead it was 20. It was going to be 20.
It was 41-27. You'd be sitting there at 41-27, and you'd say, well, this is over. And then, you know, the pain in the butt person in your living room would be like, well, technically, it could still. And then they'd actually be right, though, because the Bengals did get the onside kick. It hit off Daniel Hardy's foot. But Ben Johnson, to me, was the star of the show today. Caleb Williams made some big plays. He was up and down. He had this stretch in the middle of the game where he was, I think, 9 for 18 passing and then rallied from that late. Kyle Manunga had a great game. But, man, this was everything you hoped you were getting when you hired Ben Johnson if you were the Bears. Great late game management, sound, smart play calling throughout. 3 trick plays that all basically worked. But at the end, Ben Johnson had this play in his pocket and he didn't want to get into details because he doesn't want to tip his hand to future opponents. He had this play in his back pocket and was just waiting all day. He said he was hunting for this coverage. And he got it on the Bears' last play. And Pat, this is the high end of the potential of what putting Caleb Williams with Ben Johnson can be for the Bears. It isn't right now, but it can be like this, where you have a coach who has a great play, who knows exactly when to call it, and you have a quarterback who can step up and deliver the throw that Caleb Williams did on a 58-yard touchdown pass to Colston Loveland to win the game with 17 seconds left. They got the coverage they wanted. Ben knew it. Caleb knew it. They called the play. Caleb knew right where to look. Caleb Williams steps up in the pocket into the pass rush that is closing in on him. I think it was 90 for the Bengals. I don't have his name in front of me, but had a hand in his face as he threw it. And it is a strike. 30 air yards downfield. to Colston Loveland, threading a triangle of Bengals DBs right there by him. That's a great play. That's also not enough. I mean, it's great, but they have no timeouts at that point. You're still, and Colston Loveland caught that at, what, probably the 40, just inside field goal range, where you could try one with Cairo Santos. Then it's a combination of the Bengals being a horrible tackling team, a horrible defensive team, and Colston Loveland being quite an athlete. He turns around and he outruns everybody in the end zone, and that is essentially the end of the game. The Bengals did get to midfield and try one heave toward the end zone, but it wasn't even close, and Nashawn Wright picked it off. It was an incredible ending.
Of note, the Bears blitzed on the Hail Mary, just, you know, for those of us who, a year after the Hail Mary, think that that's probably
going to happen. It's part of the upgrade that they needed, Patrick. Somebody that, Ben Johnson also, you know, the way he was playing the Bengals go-ahead score.
Yeah.
With a couple of minutes. I know you especially took note of that, where he was not going to just give them the touchdown once they got inside the 10, but he saw Zach Taylor was going to try to do both,
yeah.
Try to play the clock and win the game. And Ben Johnson started burning timeouts right there, planning for the likelihood that they would score a touchdown and the Bears would need as much time as possible.
I know how much you like this stat, Jason, so I'm going to give it to you right now. At the two-minute warning, the Bears had a 99.7% chance of winning.
Honestly, it sounds low for being up 41-27.
Before the Colston Loveland pass, they had a 74.5% chance of losing.
I guess that's because they only needed a field goal. But again, you and I were just before we came on, we're looking at the Colston Loveland play, and they're running that with no timeouts. If he doesn't break the two tackles and then break away from the field to the end zone, it could have gotten very, very dicey at the end as to whether or not they would have even gotten a field goal attempt off.
Yeah, that's what a couple of the players said. Was Roma Dunze said he was shouting at Loveland, get down, because he thought that if he had run to, say, the 15 and gotten caught, that there was a chance the Bears couldn't have run all the way up and spiked it in time. And that's probably true, because had he gotten caught, it probably would have been about 20 seconds left. And you've got Caleb, you know, in the backfield 50 yards away, probably. So, you know, then it would have been a fire drill. Loveland made it not matter. And it was just, it was just a wild, wild finish. The Bears made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, so the big thing is they won. And you love to talk about this.
Right.
You love to say how hard it is to win on the road, even against the Bengals.
Yep.
And you're right. The big thing on Sunday is if you win. If you find a way to do it, no matter how it looks, no matter what it takes, like, you need every drop of Ben Johnson creativity. But that's Sunday. Monday morning, you wake up and you need to look at a lot of the problems. There are still a lot of the same issues that they've had.
And some new ones. Special teams popped up today. They give up a 98-yard opening kickoff return for a touchdown to Chuck Sizzle. Do you know that that's his nickname?
No.
Chuck okay. Sizzle. All Charlie right. Jones, Chuck Sizzle. From Deerfield, by the way.
Local. That's like 10 minutes from Halliswell, probably.
So they give that up. They have a field goal blocked at the end of the first half. And then you mentioned the onside kick. And in that one, Daniel Hardy was engaged as a blocker. And the ball hit his shoe. And it hadn't gone 10
hadn't
yards.
Hadn't gone far enough, yeah.
Nope, but because it hit a bear, it was a live ball. Mm. There was a pile of humanity that took a good minute to get unpiled. And the Bengals had the ball. And, I mean, I can't stress this enough, Jason. The Bengals, two touchdown drives at the end of the game, all came with when they had no timeouts. This isn't them scoring. It's them scoring quickly, and it's them scoring without the benefit of stopping the clock. It was so fast and so just jarring that the Bears are lucky they survived.
The Bears, I mean, if you're looking at all the problems that they will have to get into, and Ben Johnson alluded to this. Ben Johnson said, we are going to have to, there's going to be a lot to coach off of, a lot of tape to coach off of. He said it wasn't pretty. It was not clean a lot of the times. I think your number one on the list of issues you need to be looking at first thing Monday morning is the defense is just bleeding.
Yep.
And the Bengals have been very good with Joe Flacco, and they have really phenomenal weapons on the outside with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. And you don't have to worry so much about the Giants next week, I guess. But there are going to be a bunch of teams coming in that have better quarterbacks than Joe Flacco and that have plenty of talented skill players and will not give you all of these opportunities to make up for your lapses, to make up for your mistakes on both sides of the ball. The defense gave up 495 yards to the Bengals offense today. Joe Flacco is 40 and has a bad shoulder and threw for more yards than he ever has in his career, threw four touchdown passes. I don't know what his, I'd have to look it up, but I bet his passer rating would have been 140 or something if he hadn't thrown an interception on a desperate heave at the end.
Yeah, he had 305 passing yards in the second half.
That's nuts, Patrick.
Well, and, you know, a couple of the things I've circled is, you know, Dio Odengbo went down with an ankle today and did not return in the fourth quarter. That is worrisome. You know, the Bears' edge rush group is thin as it is, even though we got Austin Booker back and he looked pretty good. Today he had a sack. You know, you're watching C.J. Gardner-Johnson, somebody who is pretty combustible and could be – he could help you, he could hurt you, you're never quite sure. He didn't – you know, he had a sack today. He wasn't out there toward the end. He said he was cramping because it had been 6 weeks since he played a football game. You know, you've got to watch that. Kyler Gordon – isn't going to be back for a month, probably. And, I mean, really, there's nobody else on that roster that's going to kind of jump in to save them. They've kind of got the guys they've got, unless they decide to go do something at the trade deadline. It's important to point out that the trade deadline is Tuesday, I believe at 3 p.m., and that, you know, you and I can sit here and, you know, I think we're in agreement that the Bears, if they are a playoff team, are a bottom of the list, can't threaten for a championship playoff team at best, right?
Yeah.
And we can debate, hey, why would you ever give up something in the future for, you know, for this team? But they're also a team that's two games over 500 right now.
5-3 is a big deal for the Bears.
Do you know the last time the Bears were 5-3?
It had to be 2018, I would think, right?
No, nope. It was Lovie Smith's his last year when he got fired.
Wow.
So you're in, or 5-3 or better. So you're in this position where at the midway point of the season, whether it looks good or looks ugly, on paper, you've got a chance.
I mean, Sunday night, they are barely out of the lead for the NFC North. Well, they're 5-3. The Lions are 5-3. Green Bay's 5-2-1 as of Sunday night. That's, you're right there. But Patrick, we both know there's so much ahead as far as good opponents coming in.
Well, and Ben started talking a couple of weeks ago about, hey, you know, we're going to be playing our best football in December. And that was very intentional, I think, is him sitting there and acknowledging, listen, I know this doesn't look great now, but if we can just get by. And, you know, they've got a schedule between, you know, they've got the Giants. They go to Minnesota, who looks a lot better today than they did yesterday. And then they play the Steelers. I mean, what, you go 2-1 there? I mean, 1-2? Even if you go 1-2, you're sitting there, you know, with a winning record in late November.
Yeah, which is great progress for them. But I think Ben Johnson, for all the talk that he has done about winning now, I think that he does prioritize the long run. I think he has acted like someone who is going to be here for a while and needs to use his influence in with that as a priority. We both agree, right? He's the most influential person in House Hall right now.
Absolutely, yes.
He's the guy who's getting the nod on personnel decisions. And I think he wants to win and win sustainably. I would stand by what I talked about last time we were on here talking about the trade deadline. I am not making any moves, if I'm the Bears, that are short-term. If there is a move in the category of the ones they made for Claypool, DJ Moore, which was not a deadline trade, but Claypool and Montez Sweat at the deadline, where it was kind of a win-now move, but it was also getting someone that you expected at the time to be a long-term piece, I'm for that. I'm not for you give up a second-round pick for somebody because you want to make a push to try to, you know, I don't know, win a playoff game this year or something like that.
Caleb Williams is healthy, and we can debate his efficiency all day, but I think one of the things we shouldn't take for granted is when your, you know, most important player is upright and you have a winning record. I mean, there is an argument to be made that, hey, you know, this may not happen next year. I mean, look around the league. Look at, you know, the number of just quarterback attrition. And I mean, you know, you're one rolled ankle away from, having to play your backup. And the Bears aren't there. And Caleb, you know, I think you could sit there and say, you know, our offense is healthy and getting better. Who knows what this team's going to look like on December 15th. You know, I'd hate to be kicking myself for not adding something. But, I mean, I think all they could or should add, if they could get help at edge rusher, a little bit of help at corner. But that's what everybody in the league needs. You know, yeah. It's not – it's. I wish that they had a need that was a little more available, I guess.
Well, I don't think Ben Johnson would have trouble pointing out needs. I mean, they just went to find C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who, by the way – made it to his debut game and played well. Mm-hmm. But they also look like they need a left tackle. I don't think Theo Benedett has been the answer there. I think they might need a running back. I don't know that I'm just sold on Kyle Manangai as a 1B to DeAndre Swift's 1A.
How dare you?
A game like this against the Bengals. The Bengals have been a horrible run defense, I think worst in the league coming into this.
Yes.
I mean, there's still some needs here, but again, the Bears are in no position to be giving away anything valuable in their future in terms of a first or second round pick, unless it's for the talent equivalent of what you would get there. And even then, when you factor in the salary cap, I don't know if that would make sense for them. I don't know if a trade like the one they made for Montez Sweat, where then they're going to have to commit $25 million a year to a pass rusher, whereas if you draft one in the top 10, it's probably more like $8 or $10 million a year on a four-year deal. I don't know if they're in position to do those kinds of things. You mentioned Caleb Williams. On my list of things that the Bears will really need to scrutinize and solve coming out of Cincinnati, Caleb Williams was all over the place. There was good. There was bad. He hit a lull in the middle of the game where he went 9 for 18, and the Bears are kicking field goals in the red zone, and next thing you know, they go from, I think it was up 4 to down 3, over that sequence. The completion percentage still not at all where it needs to be. I'm thinking back, Patrick, to a third and goal from the 1, I believe. I think on second and goal on that play, on that sequence, there is a throw to Rome Odunze open in the end zone that is well behind him.
Hit him in both hands. Rome said he should have caught it, but yes.
Not a good pass. Yeah, both can be true.
Yes.
And followed by a delayed game. Mm-hmm. Am I correct about that? So, like, two of the main problems, if you were to sit here, if someone asked you, hey, real quick, what are your concerns about Caleb Williams? I think right away you'd say throwing accuracy and pre-snap. And you have both there. They end up scoring a touchdown. He's got the talent to come back from that sometimes. If he's given enough opportunities, he's got the talent. I mean, and his talent, again, was undeniable at the end of the game. But those are concerns, too. He finishes 20 of 34, which is under 60% completions again. 280 yards, 3 touchdowns, 114.8 passer rating. That's great. That's his highest passer rating since he did it to the Cowboys. Cowboys and Bengals last and second to last in the league in defense. That is not an arrival. You can only beat who's in front of you today, but that doesn't necessarily prove something for the long run. He also caught 2 passes for 22 yards, and he ran 5 times for 53 yards. I really liked what he did as a runner today. Mm-hmm. I think that the passing game was much more all over the place than his numbers show. The receiving, the 2 plays where he caught passes, kind of a novelty that you're not going to see maybe again all season, but certainly not regularly. The running, though, was something where I felt like that was what I'd like him to do. Decisive, taking advantage of it when it's there, and for the most part, pretty safe. I think he might have taken one hit that was a questionable late hit, not necessarily Caleb's fault for putting himself in danger. But I liked that part of his game. I think that the other things need to tighten up. The pre-snap stuff. There were still plays where in crunch time at the end of, at the end of the game, or was it at the end of the first half? I think toward the end of the game, there was too much time ticking off between plays. There were multiple times throughout the game where they narrowly avoided a delay of game, and you see Zach Taylor running down the sideline, waving to the official, saying, hey, 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 the play clock ran out. There's some stuff to fix there. I also think that
in addition to the defense and Caleb's accuracy and pre-snap, you still have some issues in the red zone. You're still not cashing in on that. And again, the Bengals are a horrible defense that will give you the chance to make up for that. The Steelers aren't. The Packers aren't. The Lions aren't. All of these teams that are, the 49ers aren't. All these teams that are waiting for you in the second half are not going to give you all these chances to correct that.
Bears 4-for-6 on touchdowns in the red zone. Today, that's a number that looks a lot better than the 1-for-3 they went a week ago. Any other little things we're missing? Roma Dunze didn't have a catch for the first time in his career. We have mentioned that, I believe. Can we talk about Britton Brown real quick?
Yeah.
Britton Brown, on third down, once the Tremaine Edmonds pick six gets called back and they spot it at the 4, the Bears decide that they're going to go run, and have the Bengals use their 3 timeouts. There's a false start in there too, by the way. So it's 3rd and 10, and they hand off to Britton Brown, and he's running left, and he's going kind of toward the left sideline, and he sees the first down marker. And, I mean, I think for all the world, has an opportunity to get it. And instead decides to do a baseball slide inbounds for a gain of 6. You'd sit there, and some would say that that's smart because it ensures he doesn't get pushed out of bounds and stops the clock. But he went over to the sideline, and Eric Bieniemy did not think it was a smart idea. Britton Brown later described it as a boneheaded play.
You don't see running backs slide
very often at all. But he, he was one of the guys on the sideline who was thrilled to see Colson Loveland break away toward the goal line. Daniel Hardy, one of the guys on the sideline, thrilled to see Colson Loveland break away. And I would suppose everybody who plays defense was probably happy to see that, because that defense, I mean, even afterwards, Jaquan Brisker was like, I feel dazed. Like, he was happy they won, but I think he was troubled by the way they got there.
Yeah. I don't know if Britton Brown will play a ton going forward. I mean, he's on their practice squad. It was an elevation for a game. And it's hard to imagine DeAndre Swift being out a while. But, Kyle Manungai showed he could probably manage it against a bad defense. I also want to talk about the trick plays. You had 3 trick plays. This is part of what you sign up for when you get Ben Johnson. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like we've seen a lot of it, Patrick. We had the fake flea flicker.
We had the flea flicker.
No, we had the flea flicker, then the fake flea flicker. Yeah. And then I don't know if we've seen much else, but he brought out 3 trick plays, all of them pretty cool. All of them essentially worked. One of them looked like it was a completion, direct snap to Cole Kmet on the first possession for a 14-yard pass from Kmet to Odunze that was on replay ruled incomplete. But at fourth and goal from the 2 on that opening drive, he calls this play where they call it hot potato, and it looks like a designed run for Caleb Williams to the right. He pitches it to Odunze running left, who pitches it to DJ Moore running back to the right side. And who's standing wide open in the right side of the end zone? Caleb Williams for a touchdown catch from DJ Moore.
Yeah, it's ostensibly Philly special from an empty set.
Yeah.
With 2 end arounds. That was cool. I love the Tyson Bagent one.
Well, let's get just real quick on the touchdown pass to Caleb Williams. That was not working in practice. They've been working on that for about 2 to 3 weeks, I was told by players, and it rarely looked really good. Mm-hmm. DJ Moore, kind of an erratic passer in practice, mm-hmm. by his own admission. Caleb Williams, dropping passes mm-hmm. in practice. Not a great look. Ben Johnson called it anyway, and it looked perfect when they ran it. I guess they got all the mistakes out when it didn't matter. The second one was great. When was that? Was that fourth quarter? Early, start of the fourth quarter, I believe. So it was very confusing to us in the press box, and I got to think it was just as confusing to the Bengals defense.
What are you showing me? It's the start of the fourth quarter?
Second play of the fourth quarter.
So they send Bagent out. We couldn't find Caleb Williams at first, and then you realize Bagent and Williams are both out there. And, so go ahead.
Oh, and Bagent is split wide right, standing next to the left tackle, who was lined up as a receiver, which is very weird.
Unusual.
Continue.
Yes. So on this play, Caleb Williams throws laterally to the right sideline to Bagent, and read number 1 is Loveland down the middle of the field, and the Bengals are actually on top of that. they are not paying any attention at all, second time in a row, to Caleb Williams on the far left side of the field. So Bajent throws it across the width of the field to Williams for a screen pass. Credit to Drew Dahlman blocking somebody from the Bengals to create space for Williams to catch it. And credit to Joe Tooney as the lead blocker as Williams goes 20 yards and now on the screen pass. Now, I was telling you about the fourth and two play, the hot potato play, and how they've been working on that for a while. Mm-hmm. Guess how long they've been working on the Bajent play?
How long?
Since Wednesday morning of the game.
Okay.
I don't know if Ben Johnson thought it up the night before or if that's when he told them about it, but the Bears players didn't find out about that play being in the mix or being even in existence until Tuesday night, and then Ben taught it to them Wednesday morning in the game, and they liked that one. And Bajent said, you know, you're nervous because for him, there's a lot of risk on this play. You're being thrown in there cold. The first part of the play begins with you have to do something that is not part of your normal job, which is catching a pass. And then a decent one, too. Mm-hmm. This isn't like giving it to somebody like Doug Kramer at the goal line, and you're not asking a ton. I mean, that's a small play. This is like catching, a 15-yard throw from Caleb Williams and then being in position to launch, and you hope no one's coming at you once you catch it. And that one worked perfectly, too. And Tyson Bajent just could not have been happier. He didn't see the play. He said he got hit as he threw, but they told him on the side it was a really good throw. He could not have been happier, Patrick, about getting the trust to execute a tough play like that. But also, you get one play and you nail it, that feels good.
I think Ben Johnson likes to be disrespectful toward the opposing defense when he can. I think he gets great enjoyment out of that.
It's from competitiveness.
And I think that he looked at the Bengals and went, we can do whatever the heck we want offensively, and kind of tested the limits of that. I mean, this is a world where they're averaging 7.6 yards per carry, and he still is throwing the ball all around the field like that. Jason, go ahead.
NFL Next Gen Stats tracked the Bengals for 15 missed tackles Sunday. That cost them 133 yards extra.
Oh.
Just on the missed tackles, that cost an extra 133 yards, including an extra 35 on Colston Loveland's game-winning catch.
I need to check something before we go, Jason. I think it's important to find out, did the Bears have fewer penalties than their opponent?
Bengals had a lot. The Bengals looked like, throughout this game, Bengals, like you said, ran the opening kickoff back for a touchdown, and that didn't feel like it meant anything. The Bengals tried so hard throughout the afternoon to lose this game and then succeeded at doing so.
Each team had 7 flags. The Bengals, though, flagged for 6 more yards, which means, Jason, for the first time all season, the Bears have been less penalized than their counterpart. That's not worth that. Jason, we'll be back later in the week, talk about the trade deadline, preview the New York Football Giants, and whatever else happens in Bears land. For Jason Leisure, I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.
Rise and shy. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.